We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I love a beautiful lawn. I hate doing lawn care. That's why I use True Green. They're the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. We all know those are some nice greens. So just imagine what they could do to your lawn. All you have to do is water and mow. And to top it off, when you sign up for an annual plan by April 20th, get one application free. Visit truegreen.com for the best lawn at the best price. Guaranteed. Restrictions apply.
We're three games into the Scott Leffler era. We'll take stock of where the program is on this edition of the Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
Good to be back on the Ziggy Cast as BGSU football opens Mid-American Conference play Saturday at Kent State. Falcons sit at 1-2 and an easy win over Morgan State to start the season. And then were thumped at Kansas State and lost this past Saturday at home to Louisiana Tech 35-7 in a game that featured a lot more positives than you would think from that final score. But the bottom line is the BG Falcons are 1-2. And so are the Kent State Golden Flashes heading into Saturday's game at Dix Stadium in Kent. We'll be on the air at 2:30 with our Medical Mutual pregame show and kickoff set for 3:30 with the Falcons and the Flashes. Joined now by my broadcast partner, John Gibson, BGSU football, going to be at Kent State Saturday. And Gibby, we're three games into the Scott Leffler era. And to me, the number one thing that has developed is due to attrition of many different sorts. This team is shorthanded at many positions, and of course the most high profile of those being the quarterback spot. Jarrett Dagey, the incumbent starter, decided to transfer. They went out and got Matt McDonald, a kid from Boston College. They said he'd clearly won the job in camp. NCAA decided he will not be eligible this year, so their starting quarterback is a sixth-year guy who started five games in his career at Boston College, then transferred and missed all of last year for Delaware with a knee injury. And really, that's sort of a microcosm of the team right now, isn't it?
Without a doubt, I think we have a situation on the team now where we just don't have enough horses to run in the big races. I think Jarrett Dagey transferring after leading the conference in passing touchdowns, that has to be the first time that's ever happened in college football where a quarterback led the conference and then transferred the very next year. I don't think that's ever happened. We also lost two quality defensive linemen, and that has not hit us as of yet, but I'm really wary of the defensive linemen, especially those interior guys, wondering whether or not they are going to be able to stand up through a 12-game season. We just don't have enough horses in the stable. We're not really ready to run in the big races yet.
Yeah, this is very reminiscent in that way of when Coach Brandon was let go. It was due to various things that when Coach Clawson came in, the program was also undermanned at some key spots. And boy, that wasn't an easy turnaround either, Gibby. And Coach Leffler has been pretty upfront that he thinks it might take another two recruiting classes to get the base number of scholarship players back in the program full time and having gone through his program, so to speak. So the first 2 years here, really, just like Dave Clawson, you just got to try and find a way to stay competitive.
You got to grin and bear it. And I think one of the things that we're hearing that when I read between the line of the coach speak that Coach Leffler has given us is he still got guys that aren't necessarily buying in to the program. In a lot of cases, you see these head coaches, they come in and they clean house of the guys that aren't buying in. But there was so much attrition between last year's team and this year's team, you can't afford to clean house, or you're really going to be shorthanded because we're already shorthanded. So, you know, he's talking about, you know, trouble that we're having on a Thursday practice. You're talking about trouble, you know, focus problems that we're having where we're not having good practice Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And then it translates onto the field. And guys have not bought into the fact that they need to make sure that they're focused in on those days early in the week if they expect to play well later in the week. And that's something that, again, your guys are going to have to, when you bring your own guys in, they've only known one way. And that's I think, what he's looking at. Nobody wants to say, hey, we're going to have to go through two more tough years, considering that this is a very tough stretch for Bowling Green football. But in order to get those guys in and learning in the manner that coach wants them to, it may take time.
Gibby, the quarterback spot, of course, is very high profile, and we all know that the offense left a lot of points on the field in Saturday's loss to Louisiana Tech, whether it was 42 or 49 or 56 or 63, whatever. There were a lot of missed plays, and Darius Wade, the quarterback, of course, gets a lot of focus. He missed some throws. He certainly was not alone in Bowling Green's failures, but what is going wrong for Darius Wade that you can see? Why is he continuing to be inaccurate?
I think everything with Darius Wade is mechanics. I believe that Darius Wade at times maybe struggles reading the defense, but then when he sees his receiver open, when he gets the read that he wants, I think he gets so excited that his mechanics go in the dumpster and he throws the ball short or he throws the ball long. You know, he's very consistent with throwing it short. When you're consistently doing the same thing over and over again, that normally points to mechanics. And he's got to make sure that he holds his mechanics. And we all know Coach Leffler is a quarterback guy. That's what he does. He has to make sure that he holds his mechanics when he gets those throws that he likes, and he has to drive through those instead of trying to short arm them because he wants to get them out as fast as possible. It also, I would like to see Darius Wade. He's an athlete. He's got to be more decisive when he decides to scramble. We saw him in maybe four or five occasions yesterday or on Saturday where we thought maybe he was going to take off and run, but then he never really took off. It was like he failed to ignite. And it's like you're just kind of standing around waiting. It's like, if you're going to take off, man, take off. You know, we would like to see him, you know, take 113 a la Matt Johnson used to be, you know, to pick up a first down on a second and long or third and long.
Yeah, and I think maybe I don't want to say that coach has been trying to hold him back, but I think especially in the first three games of the season, I don't think they wanted Darius to run that much or trying to protect him, I'm sure, physically. But now that we're going to be into the Mid-American Conference part of the schedule, might we even see some more called run, some planned run for Darius Wade here?
I think we should. And I think we're going to probably start seeing some shorter passes, some quick stuff, just stuff to get him into a rhythm. We know he's got a live arm. We know we can throw the ball far down the field. But I would like to see him maybe on some, you know, maybe on some bubbles, maybe on some wide receiver tunnel screens, things like that, that will allow him to just complete a pass here, complete a pass there before we start getting him into the intermediate routes. You know, and then he's got to get some help from his receivers too. As much as we can look and see that the ball didn't get there, there's been plenty of instances where there were just dropped balls. Like I think about Quentin Morris. Quentin Morris had six catches for 90 yards, and he easily left another 100 yards on the field last night or Saturday night by dropping passes.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. The other thing, Gibby, that's not helping is it doesn't appear the top two running backs are fully healthy. Andrew Clare was held out of most of the game, and we think actually inserted himself in that La Tech game, maybe without the coach's blessing, and got on the field. Also, Devon Jones has left each of the last two games with a tweaked ankle, and it appears to be one of those things that he'll play through. But, right, you know, especially Andrew Clare, if this offense has a dynamic player, it's him. Boy, it'd be nice for him to be healthy, but a foot injury tends to linger. You know, if those two guys continue to be subpar health-wise, this offense is going to lose a big component.
Yeah, I think Andrew Clare not being healthy, it takes a home run hitter off of the field. It takes away a guy. And I like Devon Jones. I really do. But Devon Jones is not a guy that's going to take it 70.
No.
Andrew Clare will take it 70. Devon Jones is a guy. He reminds me of myself. He's a bigger back. He's 235. He's got good feet, much better feet than I ever had. But, you know, he's a guy that's going to offer you a lot of thunder to maybe Andrew Clare's lightning. But he's not a game breaker. Andrew Clare is a game breaker. Without him, you take, without a doubt, the most proven weapon on the offense. You take that off the field because Andrew Clare has proven what it is that he can do. Devon Jones is an excellent complementary piece, and he's going to get you the hard yards. He's going to get you a lot of goal line stuff, short yardage. He'll get you that stuff. But when you want to get a screen out into the open field, Andrew Clare is the guy you want to get into open field. He's probably the most dynamic guy on the offense.
Well, and I guess maybe that begs a bigger role for Bryson Denley. We've seen his role sort of incrementally increase, especially the last two games with Clare basically on the shelf. We saw him look really good on some kick returns. Coach has really raved about his speed and his game-breaking ability. It might be time for him to get a bigger opportunity.
I think so. I think the coaches, from what I can see, I think they're trying to figure out what's the best way to use him, because Bryson Denley's not a big guy.
Right.
He's only about 175 pounds, so he's not a guy that you're going to run on the inside zone a lot. You're not going to run him on power. You may try to get him on the outside zone, but even that requires a level of physicality that you may not want to see him taking 15, 20 carries a game at that. You got to find a way to get Bryson Denley in space. He's a 10-300 guy, so his speed is not in question at all. But I think, you know, especially now with Andrew and Devon both banged up, you got to kind of protect Bryson Denley because, again, you'll be right back in the same situation that you're in at quarterback where you don't really have a guy. You got kind of pieces of a couple of guys.
Gibby, up front, the offensive line has returned a lot of veterans and semi-veterans, guys that have played a lot, in particular Caleb Bright and Jack Kramer, other guys that have played at least some and even spot starts because of injuries and other things over the years, Sam Neverov included in that. But the offensive line as a unit hasn't had that strong a performance yet. I know in particular on Saturday, you called out Sam Neverov a couple times for just flat missing a block, and he ended up getting replaced in that game. The offensive line seems like there's enough parts there, but they're not fitting together right yet.
And football is the ultimate team game, Todd, because 10 guys can do their job, and if the 11th guy is not doing what he's supposed to do, then the play won't have any success. And we saw that a lot in the running game and the passing game, but we saw it a lot in the running game where everything looks good, but one guy takes a step with the wrong foot, or he doesn't step wide enough with that foot, and before you know it, he gets beat across his face, and a running play that looks like it had promise gets stopped behind the line or right at the line of scrimmage because guys aren't really following their technique like they should. You know, I called Sam Neverov off because I saw him very clearly get beat a few times across his face by a defensive tackle. That's something that you should never do. You've got to move, but blocking is something that you do with your feet. And, you know, a lot of those bigger guys, you know, you're a blessed guy if you're 300 pounds and you have good feet. That's something that those guys really have to work at and dropping that body weight, which is why a lot of guys, you know, a lot of heavyweight wrestlers wind up being great offensive linemen because they understand leverage. They understand dropping their hips. You really, and I think that's something that I saw, especially with Sam. He needed to be a lot more flexible in that lower body to be able to stand up to some of the rushes that he was seeing.
John Gibson with us here on the Ziggy Cast, talking BGSU football. Three games into the season, sort of a status report, if you will. Let's flip it over to the defense, John. And I don't know that I've ever felt as good about a defense's performance in a 35-7 loss as I did Saturday when BG lost to Louisiana Tech. I thought for the first time in years, you know, the SIDs dug up that BG had five sacks the final game of 2016 against Buffalo. But really, this feels like the first legitimate pass rush from our front four, maybe since Dave Clawson was around. And that's not to denigrate a couple of those Dino Babers teams, but that front line, something clicked maybe. I don't know. What did you see out of that performance Saturday?
What I saw was Carl Brooks really making his presence known. And he didn't get into the stat column with a sack,
right,
but he was the cause of at least three of those sacks. He was able to get in with bull rushes. He was able to got a couple of swim moves and bent the corner on some guys. Carl Brooks is a star in the making. And what he was able to do was able to collapse that pocket enough to where the quarterback had to step up. And then other guys, DeMonte Hagler got in. And then you saw Konowalski get in. You saw Nico Lawton get in a couple of times. And so those sacks were really coming from the fact that old number 44 was really just beating his guy like a drum over there on his side. And that's encouraging considering that he's only a sophomore. I would go back to those Clawson teams and say the last player we saw that young on the defensive line play that well was probably Chris Jones. And he went on to be a MAC Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah. And a NFL player and a Super Bowl champion. So we can only hope for those kind of heights from Carl Brooks. What about the defensive deployment, Gibby? In other words, how the defensive system is coming along with Coach Van Gorder. He was with us at Frickers before the La Tech game on that Monday and talked about how he felt they were about 50% installed. But he generally was upbeat about the defense even after the Kansas State game. Do you sense that both are becoming a little more comfortable and knowing what they can do now?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, you only know what you can do with these guys when you see them in live action. When you see them against other colored jerseys, you really start to get a better feel for what guys do well and what they don't do well. I think you start to see the defense is really, you know, this defense is a lot more stout than, you know, we thought about going into the season. We were thinking the defense, what might be the weak point of the team. And the defense has actually been the strength of the team. I think that, you know, with the multiple fronts, because we are thin on the defensive line, the multiple fronts that they are showing are allowing us to kind of hide where we're coming from and making teams really pay attention. That makes it tough. When you're going from a three down lineman system to a four down lineman system, that makes it tough to block because guys have to think. And the last thing you want guys to do is be on autopilot on the offense. So you make them think a little bit. It slows down their reaction time and allows guys to shoot some gaps. I think that the front seven, you know, Brandon Purse has been a great player for us this year. He's been very, very good. Just shooting the gaps and just being a linebacker. I mean, you see Brandon Purse, you think linebacker. He's doing a great job. Jerry Roberts is doing a really good job out there. You're seeing some guys that are really making strides. I'm very interested to see how far this defense is able to go and if the offense can kind of give them some run support.
And, of course, we've talked about the cornerbacks, Caleb Biggers and Juwan Hudson, both very young guys. Hudson, a true freshman, and he's had his moments where he's frankly gotten toasted. It got better against Louisiana Tech after the first touchdown they threw a bomb over him, but obviously what the front four was doing helped them out a little bit, and you need that with young corners because they're going to take their lumps. You know, this isn't a two- or three-game learning curve. It's probably most of the season before you'll really start to feel like they're where they need to be, right?
Without a doubt. And I think you see Juwan Hudson, and he's out there battling. He's out there. He keeps his head up. I think that, you know, it's a real shame that he has to be out there. Ty Redding is a guy that we expected to play. I mean, he's got size. He's got speed. He should be out there playing, but he got beat out. And Juwan Hudson is now out there playing. And, you know, he's battling, but he's at that age now where he doesn't even know what he doesn't know. He's just going out there and playing off of natural instinct and whatever the coaches have been able to put into him in the, what is it now, 8 weeks that they've had the kid.
Right.
So you'll see him start to maybe turn the corner. You saw last week, I think he improved over the Kansas State game. But teams are going to see him because he's not the biggest guy. I mean, he's listed at 5 feet, 10 inches tall, 170 pounds. He's not a big guy. And in this era of 6'4" receivers that go 215 pounds, he's going to be a target out there until he learns how to defend himself.
Yeah, Isaiah McCoy of Kent State will probably try to burn him deep because that's his MO. I saw him do it against Auburn and Kennesaw State. They try to throw the ball deep to him. And with that, Gibby, let's switch and look at Kent State a little bit. A offensive system we know and recognize well. It's basically Dino Babers' system with head coach Sean Lewis, the former OC for Dino at BG and then at Syracuse. So a lot of the defenders on this Bowling Green team probably are fairly familiar with defending it. But Kent State right now, they're in a quandary. They don't know which quarterback to play. And to me, that indicates they don't have one.
Well, that's the old saying. I think it was Jerry Glanville that said that if you got two quarterbacks, you got none.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing with Kent State. There's definitely one quarterback that they let throw a lot more than the other. There's another quarterback that pops up in the rushing statistics, which is common when you have, you know, a two quarterback system at the college level. One is a better runner, one is a better thrower, and you're really just trying to find an offense. You know, the fact that they're able to run that hurry up offense through two quarterbacks is a credit to the coaching staff as well as those two young men, because you want to get a rhythm, and getting a rhythm is hard enough when you're the one guy, but when you're rotating in and out trying to find a rhythm and have success, that's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, it seems like they've settled on Dustin Crum playing more than Woody Barrett, but they still by all accounts haven't totally shut the door on playing both of them. And you look at this Kent State defense, and even though Auburn put up 50-plus points against them last week, you know, that was Auburn on the road. This Kent State defense has some impressive components to it. Theo Majette up front gave Bowling Green all kinds of fits last year in a Kent victory at the Doit, and we don't want him wreaking havoc again. I think that's going to be the key to the game. Can they contain him and the pass rush?
Without a doubt, I mean, the offensive line has got their work cut out for them. We all remember Theo Majette. If you were at that game, he was the star of the game. He was the star of the show. And if we're going to have to keep him out of the backfield, we're going to have to keep him out of Darius's face in order for us to have any kind of success. If he plays anywhere near where he played last year, it's going to be a long afternoon in Dick Stadium.
And, you know, last year the Falcons lost to the Flashes. It was the first game after Coach Jinks had been let go and Coach Pelini took over. And frankly, Bowling Green didn't play well. And this is a whole new situation, a whole new coaching staff, a whole new all kinds of things. But I got to think some of the guys that were on that field last year got to remember losing at home to Kent State. That doesn't feel good. Does that serve as a motivator, hopefully, this week?
Oh, I think so. And I think the coaching staff knows well enough that when you see Kent State on your schedule, when you're Bowling Green, you expect to win that game.
Yeah.
When you lose to a Kent State, that's frustrating because you expect, you know, traditionally Kent's not been a strong program. So you expect to beat that team. So when you lose to a Kent State team, that's almost embarrassing. And I don't want to sound arrogant at this point because it's hard to win football games, but you don't expect to lose or even struggle with a Kent State team. And so there should be a little retribution, a little feeling that though, as though they let one get away, they've got to dig in, and there should be some type of revenge, you know, on the field or not in the practice or some type of discussion of, yo, these guys came into your house last year and handed y'all the business.
Yeah, and we'll see if BG can get it turned around. John Gibson, great to catch up with you. Of course, we'll be on the air from Kent Saturday afternoon at 2:30, and we'll be back in the Ziggy Cast next week. Gibby, thanks for joining us.
Not a problem, Todd.
Time now on the Ziggy Cast to get the opposition position, if you will. Rob Polinsky is with the Kent State radio team. He joins us to talk flash fast, right, Rob?
Yeah, that's what they call it, although last week at Auburn they decided to run some time off the clock, so we were kind of kidding, saying it was flash, not so fast.
Right, well, this is the same thing that Bowling Green went through, of course, in 2014 when Dino Babers came in. They dubbed it Falcon Fast. And, of course, Sean Lewis, the head coach at Kent State, now in his second year, a Dino Babers protege. He was with him at Bowling Green and also at Syracuse. And so now he is trying to put this hurry-up offense in. So one full year and three games of a second year in, how would you say he thinks that is going?
Well, it's interesting you say that, Todd, or ask that, because when we first met him, we asked, how long is it going to take the offense to get where you want it? And he looked at us and said, I think halfway through year two, I'll have it kind of how I want it. And it kind of took me aback that he said it would take a year and a half of, you know, game situations to get it going as fast as he wanted. But I think they're probably about on. They are quicker this year than last year. They're getting more used to it. They're running plays quicker than they did last year. And like he said, maybe a few more games will kind of have it up to speed where he wants it. They want to run a play about every 12 to 15 seconds if they can.
Yeah, that was always Dino's mantra, although I think when he came to Bowling Green, I think he said the third or fourth game of the second year, but of course he was taking over a MAC championship-level program at that time, whereas Sean Lewis came into Kent trying to get them back in contention, so maybe he gave himself a few extra games leeway there. But the other thing that's interesting is I got to believe the development is curtailed by the fact that they can't settle on a quarterback. That was not a problem when they came to Bowling Green, even though Matt Johnson got hurt their first year. They knew what they were going to do at quarterback. Why is Kent State torn between the two juniors, Woody Barrett and Dustin Crum?
I think because neither one has really separated themselves, Todd. It's kind of interesting because last year they took all camp to decide, and then finally on Monday of week one, they announced Woody Barrett was the starter, and he started last year. This year, they said there was no quarterback controversy. Of course, Woody Barrett was, you know, Kent State's offensive rep at Media Day up in Detroit when we last saw you. And everybody thought, well, there's no controversy. There's no even competition in camp. It's Woody's job. Well, Woody came out in the first game at Arizona State, and the defense played really, really well. Woody fumbled the ball twice. The Flashes fumbled the ball five times in that game, even though they only lost one fumble. They were losing 10-0 at halftime at Arizona State, and if they would have done anything offensively, they could have, you know, competed. They end up losing 30-7. It's 10-0 at halftime. And since he played so poorly in the first half, Dustin Crum got in, and we kind of looked at each other and a little surprised, and then they both played. Well, then in week two against Kennesaw State, we were told that Woody Barrett would be the starter. And he never got on the field. Dustin Crum had a great week of practice. He performed well at Kennesaw State. You know, didn't do anything to hurt the team, didn't turn the ball over. I think he was 17 of 23 for almost 200 yards, no interceptions. You know, kind of managed the game. Even I don't really like that term, but you know what I'm saying. So then last week, Dustin started and played most of the way, and then Woody did come in late. So I think that's a big part of why they haven't got, like you said, to the point that they want to, because they haven't settled in on a quarterback, and I don't think they're going to for a little while. I would anticipate Crum to start because of how he's done the last 2 weeks, but I still think they're going to see Woody Barrett at some point.
Rob, do you see a major difference in their skill set? I think Woody Barrett seems to be more of a running threat, but I haven't seen a lot of Dustin Crum. I did watch some of the Kennesaw game. I know he had a touchdown run in that game. Is there really discernible difference in their athleticism or skill level?
I think Woody is a better runner, but like you said, Dustin still can run. But Woody definitely can run better. Right now, for whatever reason, you know, Woody just isn't that accurate with his throws. That's been a problem. I mean, he'll overthrow receivers, and I think Woody can throw the ball farther than Dustin. But Dustin, to this point, has been more accurate this season. And then I wonder if part of this is in Woody's head, too, because he came in last week. And, of course, you know, he for the listeners that don't know, his freshman year he was at Auburn. Then he transferred out, went to a junior college, and then came to Kent. So part of maybe his inaccuracy coming in, maybe he wanted to show Gus Mills on and everybody that knew him down there at Auburn, maybe he had that was going and he was a little bit inaccurate. I believe he was like 3 for 11 last week, but he was missing like simple screen plays. Todd, that they were, I think they were just trying to run to get him some confidence, and they weren't even, you know, able to execute those. Now, he did have a touchdown pass on a slant pattern over the middle that was perfectly thrown, and I think it kind of showed everybody, oh, that's what Woody can do. But for whatever reason, we just haven't seen that consistently enough.
We're visiting with Rob Polinsky from the Kent State radio team here on the Ziggy Cast. Bowling Green set to take on Kent State this week. And looked like coming into the season, the offensive line could be a strength. They returned five guys that had started at least a good portion of last season. One guy got hurt, Bryce Gibbs, but returned four returning starters there. How's the offensive line looked?
Not quite as good as we had hoped. And I think part of that is two parts. One, two of the three opponents have been Arizona State and Auburn.
Right.
But the other issue, Todd, is that the backup tight end to Bryce Gibbs, Jamil Vio, 6'4", 273-pounder, was hurt against Kennesaw State, did not play against Auburn. Center Nate Warnock has gotten, who was there, he had started the last 24 games coming into this year. Now, he's played in every game, but he's not quite as been as effective. He's gotten hurt in every game, and he's had to come out of every game. So they've had to shuffle around because they've had some injuries up front. And as you know, then you kind of take some guys out of position sometimes and try to patchwork up there, and that can be a difficult thing, especially against, you know, two of the first three opponents that they had. But I do think going forward, and I think in the conference play, I think that unit can be a strength for them.
When you look at their skill positions, really two guys stand out. At running back, Joel Shaw, who gashed Bowling Green last year. Their big play receiver is Isaiah McCoy. Other than that, though, nobody's really stood out as of yet.
That's true. Mike Kerrigan was out the first two games, violated team rules, so he did not play. So last week was the first game he got in at Auburn. I think Mike Kerrigan can be a guy that can help take some of the load off of Isaiah McCoy. McCoy's definitely been, a leader so far. He's had a touchdown catch in each ball game, so he's definitely been that. I also think, other than Shaw, you know, you're going to see a little bit of Xavier Williams at running back this week, and I think he could be a guy that'll help. They were counting on Loncavius McFadden, big 6'4" redshirt freshman. He was hurt in preseason camp, and he's out for the year. So that was definitely a loss for him at a skill position that they thought that he was going to be able to do. Now, they do have a junior college transfer that's come in, Keyshawn Abram, that I think has some potential. Kavius Price, he's only 5'6". Sometimes he had a touchdown catch last week at Auburn. I think sometimes he can get lost in the secondary. He's just 5'6", about 165 pounds. He's a guy that occasionally, you know, can come up with some catches, and once in a while, Antoine Dixon. But you're right. They don't have any consistent person other than Isaiah McCoy at the wideouts.
Rob Polinsky's with us from the Kent State radio team. Let's flip it over to defense. I was really impressed with Theo Bajet last year. Of course, he had a couple of sacks against Bowling Green. I see he's already got three this year. They're playing just a three-man front or the odd front. Overall, looks like this defense has been the stronger unit on the team, right?
Yeah, especially in the first week. Again, at Arizona State, they were losing 10-0 at halftime, and the offense had put them in some really bad spots. And they were able to. And then against Kennesaw State, they muffed two punts inside their own 20. One led to a touchdown, but then they also had an interception in the end zone, which really saved that game. So defensively, they have come up with some big plays. Theo Majette has probably been the best defensive player up front. They are a little undersized up front. They don't have anybody that's even 250 pounds because right now Dominic Hill has not played. Their big nose man that's about 280 has not played this year. He's been out with an injury. Don't know how long he's going to be out. But without him up front, you know, they don't have a ton of size. Majette's 238. Zayn West would be their biggest guy at 246. In today's game, that's not very big up front. They do have a redshirt junior, Buddha Jones, that you'll see occasionally. He's a nose, and he's done pretty well. I think the strength has been the linebacking unit. Cepeda Phillips really had a good game at Auburn. Nick Faulkner has been good. The local Bowling Green fans will know the name Matt Barr. He played at Kenton. He's got a sixth season granted. So he is back. Graduate student Matt Barr has done well. Mandela Lawrence Burke has played well. He's a guy that's changed positions several times in his career at Kent State, and he's done really well as, also. In my opinion, that linebacker unit probably has played the best for Kent State defensively.
Rob, Bowling Green's coaches have raved about the play of the cornerbacks, especially since they are called on to really be one-on-one most of the time without a lot of help as far as the scheme of the defense. Jamal Parker, Elvis Hines, have you seen them shine?
Yeah, I mean, at times, I mean, you know, last week they were involved in a ton of tackles simply because, you know, Auburn was so big up front and they were getting into the secondary. And Ty must have called Parker and Hines' names, it seemed like, half the night because they were having to come up to make a ton of tackles. But, yes, in their coverage they've been pretty good, and then the safeties have been decent. You know, Keith Sherrill Jr., I think I mentioned in the Kennesaw State game, he's the one who had that interception in the end zone that kind of turned that game around, and then they have a transfer from Maryland, Quantrez Knight, that he's looked pretty good at times. Now, he was shaken up last week at Auburn. So you'll see Akeem Peters, Keith Sherrill Jr., Jamal Parker, Elvis Hines in that secondary. And then they'll also bring in other guys, you know, Knight and Dean Clark, Miles Daniels. So I think it's a pretty deep unit.
Rob, on the special teams, you talked about the two muffed punts against Kennesaw State. Did that lead to some changes on the punt return unit?
Yeah, they've been changing guys, and right now they have Kavius Price, but you know they've tried different people. Isaiah McCoy fumbled a punt back there, so yeah, they've made some changes right now. Last week it was Kavius Price, and they didn't have any issues, but we'll have to see going forward who they go with. And kick returns, they have Jamal Parker. He kind of settled into that position late last year. Did a real nice job in the second half of last year. Auburn wouldn't even kick it to him. They just, you know, just booted it out of the end zone, so he didn't have any chance to return. But the strength of the unit, the special teams unit, is that, you know, they're all the punter, Derek Adams, is tremendous. He's back. You know, Matthew Trickett has done a great job with place kicking. He saved the day with Kennesaw State. He kicked a field goal at the end of regulation to put it in overtime. He kicked a 43-yarder in overtime to win it. And then their long snapper, Joy Palumbo, is a senior. He's back. So you have all your specialists back. That definitely helps that unit.
Rob Polinsky with Kent State Radio. We appreciate you giving us the lowdown on the Flashes, and we'll see you at Dick's Stadium on Saturday.
Looking forward to it, Todd. Always good to see you and John and the rest of the crew. We're looking forward to seeing you guys.
And that's going to wrap up this edition of the Ziggy Cast. Thanks to Rob Polinsky and, of course, my broadcast partner, John Gibson. We will speak to you from Dick's Stadium in Kent on Saturday. Medical Mutual pregame show at 2:30. Falcons and Flashes at 3:30. We'll be back next week with a new edition of the Ziggy Cast. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying, "Hi, Ziggy Zumba."
Thanks for listening to the BGSU Ziggy Cast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.